So if you take the idea of the AI scribes, for example, it really started off with two people that were willing to consider it. And then it's grown from there. And it grew because it's something that's so visible. It's, you see it, you see them actually say that it works well. And then you see the note with no edits. And so it just becomes this like loop where you can implement it and show that it actually works in a small group. And then it just spreads.
Hey, welcome back to the Digital Orthopedics Podcast. Today, we're continuing to speak to some of the speakers that are coming to the Digital Orthopedics Conference San Francisco, DOCSF, on October 3rd, 2025. I'm very excited to have Dr. Joe Marat, who has now become one of the surgeons at a moderately large 15-partner group out in Carmel, Indiana. And one reason he stands out is that he has, since his arrival at Forte, which is the name of the group, really led the charge for their group and the digital transformations and adoption of technologies such as robotics. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Stefano. I'm excited to talk to you about this stuff.
Yeah. So we have a little format here. Tell us a little bit, because you'll be in the arthroplasty breakout session with Ilya Bendic and some other speakers. What technologies that you find are most compelling that are available today, are you keen about? Are you excited about?
You know, I think about it from things that help us in the office and things that help us in the OR. And it's actually remarkable how efficient these AI scribes have become in our practice. We had a pretty traditional like staff model where we were all reliant on scribes in the room walking around with us and rooming patients staying with us in the room. And a lot of us went to using these AI scribes, and it's incredibly cost effective. And just the quality of the documentation is just so impressive, especially when you're doing something as repeatable as interviewing patients about their knee arthritis and hip arthritis and appropriateness for joint replacement. I've been impressed with it. And I think it's only going to keep getting better as these systems keep learning.
You know, I have to admit that I'll be sitting there, scribe in the background. I'll take some notes as well. There's this misunderstanding that we can multitask. And in fact, when typing, I'm actually not listening. And so I'll get the digital scribe to put out its content. And it might say the grandmother has some disease. Let's say it's neuropathy. And I didn't pick up on it. And I had to turn around and ask the patient, does your grandmother have neuropathy? And she, in this case, she said, yes. I'm like, gosh, I completely missed that. But the software did pick it up. It was amazing.
The human scribe can get it sort of perfect because they've learned it from me. The AI scribe is truly comprehensive. And then I have to sort of edit it to some extent to make it what I want it to be. But I think it brings up this idea that I read about sometimes of collaborative AI, where I think it requires some input from a human and a AI model to get to the right answer.
And what other technologies have you been excited about? I know you're very keen on robotics.
Yeah, you know, so I've had a history with robotics for a while now. So I was a computer science major before I went to med school. And then I was a fellow at HSS 2013-14. And so when I came out into practice and adopted that early on just for partial knees, and I think I was a bleeding edge adopter for total hip back then. Then, you know, when my practice moved here, I was one of the surgeons that was really keen on bringing Mako into our surgery center and into the hospital here. And it really changed the way I think about knee replacement. If you think about robotics and its adoption and joint replacement, it's early. Even though we see so much about it now, it's still in that early part of the curve. But when I think about what it's done to my own practice as someone that thinks about it constantly, about the nuances of it, I think it's truly transformational technology. And why I say that is it changed the way in which I approach soft tissue around the knee, first adopting things like kinematic alignment and inverse kinematic alignment, and then making it so that it's neither of those. It's just what works for that patient. It's personalized to that very specific patient. It's again, dealing with the inputs that we as the human performing the surgery put into this software that shows us what we can't see with our own eyes. And then it's gone as far now as taking a subvastus approach that I knew of when I was a resident, but rarely saw, and making it the primary approach for knee replacement. I would go as far as to say that robotics really helped me work towards a muscle sparing approach that I didn't know was possible before I stopped relying on seeing as much of the joint.
Tell us a little bit about having become the sort of unofficial lead for digital transformation in your practice. What have you learned about digital transformation in the private practice environment?
Yeah, it's fun to have a job where people trust me and rely on me for advice, but I don't have an official mandate to go do any of this. So It's actually nice in some way working in that way, because the things that I sort of bring up, the things that I sort of champion for us, end up being things that I get excited about. And most people, when I show it to them, they get equally, if not excited, interested. And then we build a consensus around it. And so if we move on something, it becomes something that we all sort of genuinely vet. And then when we act on it, it's something that we needed.
So I think you touched a lot of really interesting points. One is, going from backwards, is like you need to find a need, not just it has to fill a need. And the other is to ensure that there's consensus around its adoption. How do you get to consensus? What's your technique? What's your magic sauce?
I think it's different with each thing. It's, if it truly fills a need, then it's easy. And then I sort of work in a way where it's just really sort of democratic. We all sort of don't want to impose anything on anyone. So if you take the idea of the AI scribes, for example, it really started off with two people that were willing to consider it. And then it's grown from there. And it grew because it's something that's so visible. It's, you see it, you see them actually say that it works well. And then you see the note with no edits. And so it just becomes this like loop where you can implement it and show that it actually works in a small group. And then it just spreads.
Awesome. Let's go to future. You're looking outside of Forte's orthopedic group. You go to conferences, you read the journals, you're on LinkedIn a lot. What technologies excite you that are coming down the pike over the next 2-3 years that you think you'll probably be looking to adapt or adopt?
Things that I want to see, especially in the OR, is more AI in our workflows. It's AI for decision support in the logistics around the OR. It's decision support in choices we make in surgery. And those things are, they exist. I don't know that they exist in the form that creates true value for most of us in a way that we would adopt it in our centers just yet. But I think especially in robotic knee replacement surgery, I think that that is going to exist in the next 3 to 5 years. And then in a center like ours, you know, we pay attention to the throughput through the ORs. We pay attention to what others are doing. And, you know, I want to get out to Atlanta at some point and see what Charlie DeCook is doing. I'm sure there's something to be learned there. Maybe it's not getting to 12 by 12, but there's something that we can clean up in our operations after seeing how he accomplishes that.
It was fascinating having Dr. DeCook at DocSF last year, and we had him up on stage asking questions of the startups. He was so on target about the question about what's the need, what's the practice with protocol.
Radical transparency, right?
Radical transparency, data collection. And there's so many other really cool technologies. We're all getting excited about AI. But have you guys looked at, for example, patient engagement platforms?
We do. We use one. To be honest, I don't log into it much. My support staff, primarily with patients.
It's not a bad thing. That doesn't mean you're not using it. It's been used on your behalf and very effectively for your patients. I'm sure they'll love having it.
They do. And it's effective. We use it for our hospital patients and we haven't used it in the surgery center yet. It's been a pilot for us. The hospital already had licenses for it. So we thought we'd trial it. And it's good and it's bad. I think there are these messages that go out. There's a lot of like educational content in it and it bubbles up true concerns some of the time, but then it also opens up this chain of communication that sometimes I'm concerned about happening in a chat or a text forum. There's definitely been instances where we look at the messages after a few hours and think this really needs to be a phone call. And so, because I think some of the nuance is lost in it, and we only see it in sort of retrospect after a few hours lag in the messages. And so I do have my concerns about those platforms. I think they do serve a purpose, but I think there is opportunity to have messages sort of analyzed, transferred to something that engages with the patient a little bit faster than a human can interact with them and the lag associated with that, and then sort of triage it to this needs to be a phone call now, or this can just be another response that's reviewed by staff member in the clinic later.
No question. I'll tell you, it's interesting to me. Those are the conversations we'd like to have at the conference as well, because a lot of these companies are there and they need to hear back from us, real world feedback. I have to say that we've been held back a little bit for concern around the world of hallucinations with generative AI. But many of these chatbots that are based on natural language processing and have these chat interfaces that are very human-like can be taught to look for those things and actually float them. Literally, some of the newer agentic AI platforms should be able to even literally make a phone call, because they can be allowed to actually trigger the phone call from the app. So there's so many cool things that we can do going down the road to address those questions. I think we're all a little skittish about the concern around the hallucination part, but there are technologies like called RAG that you're very familiar with that should be able to eliminate or minimize that interface. And especially when it comes to calls coming into the clinic, I mean, obviously we don't think that that's relevant because most of the time they go to voicemail. Messages get picked up on the phone at the end of the day, and it's not necessarily even within 2 hours. I'm not sure that our alternative systems are much better than those apps.
Yeah. And if it's waiting till the end of the day, an agent that may not be able to give them an answer that's 100%, that would be 100% comfortable with 100% of the time, it at least gives them an answer and tells them that this, I think that's the question. Do we have to tell them that this is an agent that's acting on our behalf? I don't know what you would call it when you're sort of describing it to a patient that may not understand what a AI agent is, but do we describe it as something that's acting on our behalf, but will contact you within a few hours to verify everything that you've heard in the interim, you know? But what happens in that those few hours if it's bad advice? So yeah, I would be skittish about it. It's either going to be a medical assistant that has to interpret what the patient is saying and then work within those guidelines and give advice based on the guidelines that we've given them, or it can be this algorithm that could theoretically be more efficient and closer to accomplishing what it's been programmed to do as opposed to trained to do. So yeah, we do hold it to a higher standard, but maybe it's because it works so much faster and its adoption could be so widespread. It's a systematic error as opposed to an error that one MA makes at that point.
Great discussion. And we'll take all this conversation to DocSF in our breakout session on arthroplasty on October 3rd. Thank you for joining us then. And thanks for joining us today.
Of course. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.